My next guest is a man who specialises, well, I don't know if he specialises in it, but he loves Korean cinema. And because Parasite did rather well at the Oscars the other day, we thought we'd get David Oxenbridge to talk about some other Korean movies. Kia ora, David.
Kia ora, Brian.
Welcome to Nights.
Thank you, and thanks for kicking off my Give a Little campaign for my new computer.
Ah, yes, that's right. Yeah, you've got it there. Is it still flickering?
No, the flickering is finished, but it is going to have a bit of a fit later.
Yeah, well, see, our computer system sometimes does that, so it's nice to have the backup in there. Now, I don't know a lot about Korean movies, but there's one, and I don't even know the name of the director, but one movie I did watch a few years back was one about a train sort of goes around the earth in perpetual motion in an ice age, which has been created by humans because we got carried away with trying to stop global warming and we created the opposite. And it was a Korean director anyway.
Same director as the film that you just talked about, Parasite, Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah, and it was a kind of an action thriller. And being a bit of a train buff, I had to watch that one, which I rather enjoyed. Tell me a bit more about this director.
About this director, so Bong Joon-ho is one of the directors, I think they call them one of the second wave directors. And so when Korea began to open up in the 90s after democracy came, him along with Park Chan-wook, who directed Old Boy, and a number of other directors, they were very much clued up about Western cinema and other forms of cinema. They films opened up, more films could come into the country, so they were able to broaden their horizons, so to speak. And from that, ushered in the second wave of Korean film. So he's one of those, and he's been a consistent force in Korean cinema, and he's produced, which is what I'm going to talk about today, a film called Memories of Murder, which has actually been designated the best Korean film ever. So he's been a consistent heavy hitter.
You said the second wave. Well, what was the first wave?
I think the first wave would have been, I think that was around the 80s when there were some political films that were coming out where they began to kind of slightly loosen the reins. All the films back then, of course, were heavily censored because they had a succession of dictators who looked after the country or dictated over the country. And in the 80s, they kind of loosened up a little bit, and it meant a few political films were to come through. I've probably got friends of mine listening right now who are probably screaming. I may have got the first or second wave wrong, but he was certainly from that era. And so once democracy came and films were able to kind of flourish and they were able to add a lot more, not just of their own kind of political themes, but also add in a lot of what they'd learned at school. I think Bong Joon-ho was at one of the first schools that opened up the Korean Academy of Film. And so he had a very well-rounded understanding of film.
How much of his art was based on what he'd grown up around in Korea and Korean culture? How much was the influence of Western films or films from any other part of the world?
That's a really hard question because I don't know enough about him. But I mean, if you just look at his films solely, so much of his films are about class. They're about political ineptitude. So there's even the films that are quite overt, like The Host, which is a monster film, is a very barely veiled attack on capitalism, on politics and inept governments and inept forces that are out there that are also plundering the family unit. So it's hard to answer that question, but he's someone who's incredibly self-aware, but he's a really damn good storyteller too. So his films never suffer at the hands of someone who's overtly trying to, you know, throw something down your throat.
And he's not shy about a bit of action either, is he?
No, he's not shy about a bit of action, although he's not as dark as some of his contemporaries like Park Chan-wook or Kim Ji-woon, who have produced a lot of very, very dark films.
When I first came across his work, and I didn't even really know who he was, but people likened him to a kind of Korea's answer to Quentin Tarantino, that kind of of style.
It's interesting you say that, because Quentin Tarantino actually listed Memories of Murder in his top, I think his top 20 films from 1992 on, which was a big thing. And I think it may have been Campbell Park Chan-wook, but he actually helped one of his films get distributed. It may not have been Bong Joon-ho, but he's certainly a huge fan of his work.
Is Bong Joon-ho representative of Korean film, or is he an exception?
If I said he was, it'd probably be a million Koreans who say, look, there's a huge diversity in Korean film, and there certainly is a huge diversity of Korean films. And I wrote a paper once about that, and a couple of the Korean professors kind of took exception, because, like anything, when you're inside a paradigm, you really can't kind of see it. And they kind of took exception to the way I painted things. But for a lot of the films that we know in the West, they are quite dark, they are quite ironic, they are very, very political, and they manage to walk this incredible tightrope of being very socially responsible and at the same time providing incredibly entertaining narrative. So he certainly is representative of that.
Tell me then, you've got a list here.
I do.
I think we've got five movies you want to talk about. Memories of Murder, maybe the first one.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Memories of Murder is actually based on a series of real-life murders. It was an incredibly exciting film because it was one of those murders that I believe had the country wrapped. I think the murders took place in the 1980s before they had the ability to track DNA. And it's about, in an episode, these cops who are down in this very small parochial town. And one of the main actor is Song Kang-ho, he has been in many of his films, like Parasite. He plays the father. And he's just an incredibly nuanced actor who's able to play this detective who's bumbling. It's someone you really feel for. And he's able to tell if you are a criminal just by looking at your eyes. And that's repeated throughout the whole film. They don't find who the killer is, but there's a series of murders and rapes that happen, and it's a really darkly atmospheric film, and it really is one of its best films, and probably, you know, and I have to agree with a lot of critics out there, I think it probably is the best Korean film. The interesting thing is that they've actually now, I think it was this last year, they've actually found the guy who killed all these women. So
really?
They had the country on a knife edge in the 1980s, and just through DNA, they've actually just found out who actually did it. He confessed. So it's quite incredible. But it's one of those things. It's a horrifying film, and there's a lot of black humour in there. But it's just such a sumptuous film. Some of these scenes, and I think it might have been set during the monsoon when you're. Very dark scenes outside where you can hear the crickets kind of making their noise, and it just feels thick with atmosphere. He's a master at creating scenes like that.
Oasis came out the year before.
Yeah. Oasis was directed by a man called Lee Chang-dong, who was like an ex-minister of culture, I believe, and
when he directed the film?
No. He directed a few films. He actually started quite late in his 40s, in the 1990s. And then this would have probably only been about his third film, I believe. And I'd probably call that a social realist film, but with a little hint of melodrama in there. And it's about a kind of inept man who's probably somewhere on the spectrum who gets out of jail. And he goes to visit the family of the man that he killed, or murdered by accident. I think it was an accident. And while he's there, he finds out that there is the sister of the family is living in his house by herself. She has cerebral palsy. And they strike up this relationship. It's an incredibly beautiful but heart-wrenching film, because it really kind of tests your assumption. You know, it challenges your assumptions and your prejudice, because you see these two, this couple who we probably never think or would never accept would fall in love, actually really fall in love, despite the fact that everyone's kind of out to stop them. And there's just a couple of beautiful, just sporadically, some kind of, I guess you could call them fantasy scenes, but the fact is in their world they're not fantasy scenes, where you've got this woman, this actor called Moon Sori, who plays this woman with cerebral palsy, who gets up out of a chair in the subway and starts dancing. And all this time you've seen her in a wheelchair kind of doing her cerebral palsy thing. But that's the reality they live in. They're in love. despite the fact that they're such flawed characters. And it's not a happy ending, but I think it was probably the first film that I saw that really got me on the track to loving Korean film. I'm not really into those kinds of films, but it just ripped my heart out. It was fantastic. That's really what started this all for me.
You've got two movies from the same year, 2008, Daytime Drinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of critics, I think, you know, a lot of the best films were kind of in that era. Once these massive companies began to virtually integrate and they shoved a lot of the smaller players out. So
Massive companies.
When we talk about vertical integration, they do everything from fund, produce, distribute, and exhibit. They do everything right through. It's not even the States that has companies that are comparable to this.
So Korea has, its movie industry is massive.
It's massive. It's huge. But at the same time, in saying that, what it does mean is that their hit rate's quite high because they have this amazing machine that's out there. But Daytime Drinking is the absolute opposite. It's one of those independent films that very barely gets through. It cost about $10,000 US to make, and It's about this guy who breaks up with his girlfriend and goes out drinking, and his friends are like, you know, let's go for a kind of a day trip somewhere. The thing about the Korean culture is there's a huge culture of drinking, and there's a lot of kind of ritual when they drink as well. So the whole film is kind of like a road movie in terms of its structure. He's out, I think it's in a seaside town, and his day just gets from bad to worse as he meets these characters. His friends never show up. They said they would, they never show up, and his day just gets from bad to worse as he just meets these series of people who basically just muck his day up. But it's what I loved about it is that it actually feels like daytime drinking. You feel like you're in this kind of summer haze, and I think it all feels a little bit kind of surreal. It reminded me very, very much of some of the 90s films like Slacker from Richard Linklater, the way it just kind of meanders in quite a gentle pace.
This is a slightly off-beam question, but is it easy to find these movies now without any dubbing, overdubbing?
That's
because if one thing that kills a movie in a foreign language for me is somebody sticking English over the top.
Oh, the same with me too, and you do miss so much. Train to Busan is on Netflix, I've seen it that it's on Netflix, whether it's Netflix New Zealand, I don't know. I know that the Korea Film Archives does play some films for free, whether they're geo-blocked and up to what year, because obviously they'll have international agreements that they have to abide by. But the answer to your question is it is actually very, very difficult. But I would imagine now with Parasite and the interest that's out there, they would make that more available. I'd say some of the platforms out there will be scrambling to secure some Korean films.
The Chase is the other movie from 2008 you like.
Oh my God, that was a sleeper hit. I had no idea what I was getting into. It's a really dark, dark,
another dark one.
Thriller.
Like New Zealand and our cinema of ease, Koreans go for the dark stuff too.
Well, no, it's not that at all. Your producer said, please have a variety of films. And I went, yep, okay.
Dark and darker.
Not quite how it turns out. That's also based on a real-life murder. The thing about this, it was a very new emerging director called Na Hong-jin. And it's about this kind of ex-cop who's now a pimp. And prostitutes keep going missing. They keep being murdered. And he sends one of his, in inverted commas, girls out to one of their jobs, and he realises that the phone number that he sees is actually the same phone number that came up with when the other girls were murdered, so he realises something's on. So he essentially finds the murderer straight away. So it kind of really subverts the genre, because it's not like a whodunit. We know who the murderer is right from the beginning, and it's this incredible actor called, what's his name? I've got it written down. Where are we? Ha Jong-woo, who is a huge actor, and he still is. He's an incredible actor, and this was the first time I saw him, and he just plays this murderer who just, you kind of want to sweep him up and hug him because he's so innocent, yet he's cold-hearted and doesn't know what he's doing wrong. And a little bit like, it gets compared with Marries a Murder because you've got this kind of bumbling police force. But it's literally a chase, so they're actually running through my old neighbourhood in Seoul when I lived there. And he's this ex-cop, he's a little bit older and he's kind of huffing and puffing. But again, it's based on a true story. And the sad thing is that you start to get really close to this woman who has a child that he has to look after. And in the end, of course, nothing good happens to her. But I'm not getting the plot down. Suffice to say, it will keep you on the edge of your seat. And it's the structure and the writing are just superb. It does not feel like it's a sophomore kind of, sorry, a first film.
I've given you 2 minutes to talk about Train to Busan, which came out 2 years ago now.
Oh, Train to Busan. That was directed by, he was actually an animation director, and I think he must have learned his chops editing and in terms of structure and storyboarding, because the film is just incredible, incredible set pieces. It's a zombie outbreak, and they just get on the KTX.
And who's the director, sorry?
The director, I knew you were going to ask me that. Let's have a look here.
Yon Sung-ho. Sorry,
Yon Sung-ho, who did a film called King of Pigs, Yon Sung-ho. He did a film called The Fake and King of Pigs, which were both animations, and then somehow he gets this incredibly huge budget with these incredibly huge actors, and he makes a film about a zombie outbreak. And just as these guys are getting on a train, there's a bit of a melodrama, a family melodrama kicked in for good measure. It's Korea, and which meant it did very, very well in the Asia region and the rest of the world. And, of course, the virus spreads on the train as it's careening at 300 kilometres from Seoul to Busan. And it's you've just got these incredible set pieces, some fantastic. You will never see better zombies ever than that film. The physical acting is just superb in it. So
best zombie acting.
I rate the extras. I want to meet the third AD's hand, shake their hands, because they did such a good job. But it's actually really terrifying. But like a lot of kind of Korean dark films, it's terrifying, but you're at the same time, you're entertained, and you, the characters are so well formed. And it's quite sad when a lot of them meet their demise. But that's a film you have to see, and if it's on Netflix, I really urge you to do it. It's probably one of the best zombie films out there.
David, thanks so much. Let's just remind people the names: Daytime Drinking, Train to Busan, Oasis, The Chaser, Memories of Murder. Korean films to watch on top of Parasite when that comes out.
Absolutely.
David, thanks so much
and
for coming in.
So much more. Yeah. It's very hard to choose them.
Yes. Yeah. David, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
That's the Korean film enthusiast, David Oxenbridge. Al, what's the name of the trust again?
So the Korean Film Festival that I volunteer for is under the Korea Cinerama Trust, and the festival's been going for 15 years in this
Cinerama
country.
I was right saying that.
It was, and we played Parasite, and we played a lot of other massive films throughout the years.
When's the next festival?
The next festival would be, it plays around about, I think, September, October of each year, so that'll be the same. Auckland, so far Auckland in Wellington, but I believe that they played in Christchurch a couple of times too. I'm not quite sure about that.
Thanks so much, David.
Films are free.
Oh, films are free. Oh,
please
that's
come.
A good point. Thanks for that.